Hi, Dedicators, and a massive welcome to the last episode of Season 8 of the Dedicate podcast. Today, I'm chatting to Dedicate Aussie pelvic health physio, Jessica Walker. Jess has her own practice in Tamworth and also has online postpartum and birth prep courses. Please check her out at The Rural Women's Physio on Instagram. Her big why for her business was born through her own challenges post-birth. We chat about this, running a business with a young family, and we open with a big chat where Jess shares so openly about her separation. Jess is truly incredible. I know you're going to love this episode. Morning. How are you anyway?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Good. What's been happening this week?
I've got the kids this week. So yeah. Just 100% kids and feel like you don't get any work done. So I've got one little one that's been a bit unwell, and then school hours is such a short day. It's impossible anyway.
Oh my gosh, it really is.
It is. But that's okay. I usually just make up for it like next week. So
yeah. So do you reckon you get, now that you're separated, do you reckon you get more done, less done, the same?
I really don't know. I like not having to always juggle everything. Like I love the week. Like I love the week with the kids, and the first few days is great because I can usually just duck into work, get see clients and come home. It's towards the end of the week when I realize all of the other stuff has gone to the wayside and I get a bit anxious. And then the week without the kids, it's just so good not to have to balance it. I literally wake up, go to a Pilates session or go for a run, come home, go straight to work. Stay at work until dinner, have dinner, go to bed. Like, it's so good.
Gosh, amazing. And do you miss the kids? I mean, I'm saying that, and I know, of course you do. Like, that's natural. But, like, do you really miss them, or does it feel quite normal now?
I miss them over the weekend if I don't have things organized. Mm. Or if I do something silly, like, you know, have a big night out and then you're a little bit hungover the next day, then you miss them terribly.
Yeah.
I don't really do that. Like I usually try to get up and get into my day. As long as I get up and either have a coffee organized with a friend or go for a run or something like that, then I'm okay.
Yeah.
During the week, I just seem to jam pack my week that I blink and I have them on Wednesday afternoons and then I pick them up on Friday. So it kind of just flies. And then by the time I have them for the weekend, I've had a really productive week. So I find I'm really present for the weekend with them.
Oh, that's quite good. So you get, so the weekend's at the start of your next round rather than at the end.
Which works really well. We tried to do it the other way around, and the transition on a Sunday afternoon was just really hard.
So the transition's a Friday instead.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have all weekend to connect before you have to do the crazy of the school week.
Mm, that's nice. Mm-hmm. And then every Wednesday you get time together.
Yeah, I just pick them up from school and usually take them for ice cream or something like that. Just a little touch point. I don't make that too long because if it is, they tend to fall apart a little bit. Like if we come home, they'll have a big cry or whatnot. So I just try to make it light, fun and quick.
Yeah.
And then, drop them back off full of sugar.
Yeah, perfect. So it's like that grandparent relationship, you know, just for that one day where you just get to spoil them and don't have to deal with any consequences.
Absolutely. Yep. So good.
And do they see their dad halfway through the other week as well?
Yeah, they do. Same thing, usually on a Wednesday afternoon, just for an hour or so.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that, you know, working well.
So yeah. Nice. Yeah, it is. It's working. It's settling, I suppose, which is good. It is hard. I think it's just the same. And I think we're talking about it the other day, like, you know, mums always get the crap. It's always where the kids unload. And so I find, depending on what's gone down on the week that Braid's had them, sometimes there's a lot of unloading in those first few days and takes a lot of settling. And then we're fine. So it just depends. If they've had a pretty smooth week, it's okay. If there's been a few things like, you know, Braid's got a new girlfriend, they've met her, they tend to hold it together and put on a face for him, and he thinks it's all hunky-dory, and then the next week it just gradually unravels. And just normal things, like normal emotions that you'd expect them to have, like, him having another a new girlfriend, and she has a family and starting to do things as a family. Like, that's a lot to process, not good, bad or otherwise, just a lot for the kids to process. And so then that tends to, get processed when they're at my place.
Yeah, I never thought of that, but of course, like, that's how it is, isn't it? And so do you feel like do you think they'll ever be able to get to the point where they can process that stuff with their dad?
I don't know. I really don't know. They feel a bit, I'm not real sure. I'm not real sure where it comes from, but he's a bit of an oversharer. He lets them in on everything. So I think more than anything, they're nearly a bit dumbfounded. They haven't actually, they're like, oh, okay. And by the time it sinks in, they've moved into my week kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. And then they also feel like they need to protect him a little. I think, again, because he overshares, like he shares a lot about his feelings, which is fine. Kids absolutely need to see you having feelings. But at times they feel responsible for his feelings, if that makes sense.
They should fix it or something, that they need to do something to fix it.
Yeah, exactly. So whereas I'm really, really conscious of not putting any of that on the kids. So I think that's probably why that unraveling happens here. And their weeks are super busy up there. Like, he starts work early, so they're up and out of the house, and they go to a friend's place while he goes to work and she drops them at school. So there's really none of that downtime to unravel either, whereas I only work school hours the week that I've got the kids. So I'm with them in the morning and I'm with them in the afternoon, so life's just a bit steadier.
And sorry, I didn't mean to go straight into this. It's just sort of happened.
That's okay. It just came up.
We had a discussion prior to the podcast, and, you know, I'm very respectful of whatever you want to talk about in this space. So if anything doesn't feel right, just let me know. How does it feel, or how do you deal with seeing things that might be happening that are normal, because people do things differently? So things that your ex-husband might do with the kids, or the way he deals with things, that you wouldn't do it that way. Is that hard?
It's really, really difficult. I really struggle. And I think I've always really struggled to let go in that way as it is. And that's been a conversation that my ex and I have had as well, and one that we've had since, that I don't get to control those things now. Day-to-day things, I'm completely okay with letting that go. I think that probably comes with even lessons that I've learned from running a business. Like, an employee will only do something to 80% of how you completed it. And I've learned to become okay with that. So little things I'm all right with. With other things, I try not to listen, and then I just put really firm boundaries in at my place. Like, and I'm forever saying to the kids, like, we don't do that here. That doesn't happen in our house, like, meaning the place that they're staying with me. We don't behave like that in this place, or we don't speak like that in this house. We don't use words like that here. So I'm forever just trying to make this house's boundaries, if that makes sense. And I'm hoping, and it definitely is happening, that over time the transition will become easier and easier. So they, if I continually reinforce those boundaries here, that they will walk into the place and just fall straight into the expectations that I have on them. It is really challenging, and it's hard for them. Like, there's definitely a transition there. It usually takes me all week, honestly, all week to get them back to the, not that they're not beautiful when they come to me, that's not true. But, like, I've got two boys and a girl. So with dad, it's all fun, rough play. Rough play. Like, you know what dads are like? They're supposed to be the funny one, the slightly inappropriate one. but they have that unfiltered for a week. So, you know, they come home and they fart at the dinner table. And I'm like, no, like you can't do that here. But they've laughed at it for a week. So it's just those little things that when you've got mum and dad in the same house, it balances out because dad might do something silly and inappropriate and then it's mum being like, you can't do that here, and you make a bit of a joke out of it.
Yeah, and then it stops, doesn't it? It doesn't happen again. Then,
exactly. But, I get that, you know, every week. And the funny stuff's fine. It's some of the language I'm like, no. But dad lets us say that. I said, yeah, that's boy time. Like that's sometimes boys speak like that with each other, but you don't speak like that around your sister and you don't speak like that around me or your nan. And so just, I guess, reinforcing a lot of those boundaries.
It's funny, but it's also it'll be hard work.
It is. It's really hard. It's exceptionally challenging, actually. The behavior is really challenging, I think. The meltdowns are really challenging. And most of the time, that's probably another way that it's really nice to have that week without them. Like you get that week where you are looking after yourself a little bit more. Mm. I get a little bit lost in work, but you also exercise during that week and you've socialized during that week. And I get all the menial tasks done, so there's less juggling. So, you know, I always shop before I pick the kids up and the house is clean. So all of that can kind of, you know, be out of your mind for the week that you've got them. So then all of your energy can be put into just remaining their rock. And that's just what I try to be. And I've been speaking with a psychologist all the way through for 6 to 9 months before we broke up. And it's now been maybe 7 or 8 months now since I moved out. She's been great, just reinforcing that I'm approaching things the right way. So the behavior is really challenging. It's really hard to stay grounded and be that rock for them when they're losing their mind because they get like it's a huge change for them and it's change every single week as well. And then there's extra change, like my ex now having a new partner. Mm-hmm. So those things are really hard for the kids to navigate. So I actually try to visualize I listened to a podcast from The Imperfects with a parenting expert, and she talked about being their tree, like you've got to dig your roots deep into the ground and let them bounce up against you. And I even visualize that when they're really losing their mind, I'm like, I've put the boundary in place. That's what's caused the behavior. Mm-hmm. The behavior is okay. It's just them feeling like they have it or finding a safe place to help balance themselves out. And that really, that just really helps me get through those really challenging moments, I suppose, because they're in fight or flight when those things are happening. So if I can remain that calm, firm, big giant oak tree that they push up against and it's a solid backdrop, then once they can rebalance their nervous system, then we can talk about the behavior and they know what's right or wrong. Like they know that they can't behave like that. I don't normally have to tell them, you know, like my 7-year-old now, like if he gets really worked up, like he'll swear at me. He'll yell at the kids and I just have to try and get the kids remove the kids from the situation. But then once he's completely mellowed out, he'll be the one that comes to me and apologizes. It's just that he's really dysregulated, I suppose. So yes.
Amazing. Like so tough. But yeah, I love that you've got some expert advice, because I find personally in anything in life, when it gets really, really tough, that's when you doubt yourself. And so that's when you can just keep drawing on advice that you've got from others. Do you find that?
Absolutely, I do. And that's when, you know, particularly my parents, I suppose, they want to help. And my mum in particular, like it'd be so challenging being a mum of an adult that's going through a hard time. I think you've got so much less control. Mm-hmm. All you want to do is help. Like all she wants to do is take all of my problems away. Yeah. But she can't do that. And so she was here during the week just for a night, and he just wants to give advice. And I'm like, Mom, I know what I'm doing. I actually know that what I'm doing and the way that I'm approaching it is right. So I've been speaking with my psychologist, but I also have a case manager. I'm working with a case manager through the relationship center. I've got my son in to the school psychologist, and I'm getting the other kids into counselors. So I've got the right advice coming from different avenues. Mm-hmm. And just had to say to Mum, I was like, I know I'm upset. I know it's hard for you to see me like this, but I know that what I'm doing is right. I don't need advice. It's just hard.
Mm-hmm. I just need to be there, sort of thing. Just be there.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do find that, like, even when it comes to advice and, you know, unloading a little bit, going through the separation and the, you know, financial settlement and custody and all of those things, anyone in my team, in my family, in my pocket, not that it's like sides or anything like that, but their opinions are so biased. And I can see that. And I guess I'm just probably being from a science background, that's so obvious to me that I don't want advice from people on my team. I want advice from completely neutral parties. So that's why I've, and experts in their field as well. And that's why I've, sussed out and found these professionals to just put around me and put around my family and just try and buffer us through this process as smoothly as possible. And also, like, we were brought up in a time that, you know, resilience was key and kids are so resilient, and I have, like, we are, but also that kind of mentality just buries all their problems. That they've got a lot to go through and a lot to process, and if I can help them do that and help them come out the other side a little more balanced, then I see that as my complete role in this. Like, I think I went through a period where there's a lot of blame, I think, and my way.
Blaming me.
So, or like, it was
you were blaming yourself?
I was blaming me. There was a lot of blame coming from the kids. And I just thought, I know that this is the right thing for my family, but the only way that I can feel great about what I'm doing is to make sure I can put all the supports around them. Because there's just so much, I don't know, societal pressure, I suppose, that, you know, for want of better words, like, a whole family is better than a broken family. Like, all of the language connotations around separation and divorce are so awful. They're all very negative. So I just thought, you know, I know as a whole family we're not the best for the kids. Yeah. So how can I make the transition through the separation have the least impact on them as adults as possible?
When it was time to make the decision, was it a long-term decision that you'd been waiting to do? I mean, I'd say it would be, but, you know, talk us through that. Like, how do you know it's time to call it?
It's really, really challenging. I was 100% in until I was 100% out. That's the kind of person that I was. I was in it to fix it. I just had put a line in the sand for myself. And I think that's a really important thing to do. I think that's something that I didn't do for a really, really long time. And I think that's a hard, just having those boundaries around yourself, for in whatever shape or form they may take. When you meet somebody when you're so young, so I met Braid when I was 19, you grow together. So you mold, and you mold a little into them and they mold a little into you, and you really lose that sense of where your firm boundaries are. It just becomes really blurred, I think. And over a period of time, and especially being so young, you really don't know yourself, I don't think. And so when it started going downhill, I just remember saying to myself, like, I can handle anything. That's fine. I can handle this stress. I can handle working through this. I can handle, all of the difficult stuff that comes with it. But if I see this impacting my kids, that's it, I'm out. If we can't shelter the kids from what we're going through as a couple, then it's time to be a little bit more drastic. There was one afternoon that it was just a normal family situation. Like, I turned the TV off and my whole household just blew up. It just showed me that everyone's nervous system was just on, like, they were just walking on thin ice. Everyone was just holding it together. And I think it was that for me that I was like, okay, they are picking up everything that is going on between Brad and I. We need to make a choice now. And the only choice at that point that I saw was to move out.
Was he in agreement that that was a good option?
Yeah, he was. So he actually ended up staying in a motel that night. And then I called him the next morning after I got the kids to school, and we met in a park and had coffee. And I said, I'm going to move out. And he just said, yeah, I think that's a good idea. So it was up and down after that. Again, as I said, like, I'm 100% until I was 100% out. For me to make that decision was huge. And I'm not one to, like, once I've made a decision, I've just made a decision. I don't fluff about. But over the next, so I think it must have taken us, because then my parents helped me buy a place for us to move into so we could stay in the same suburb. So maybe 8 weeks we lived together before I moved out. And within that 8 weeks, he would have asked me near on every week, so are we still doing this? And I was like, yes, I don't. You've known me for 15 years. Like, I don't make a decision and not follow through. I might fluff about making the decision, but once it's done, it's done.
What about once you moved out? Were you in agreement on most things?
To begin with, we were very much in agreement. And even before I moved out, we were extremely amicable. We sat down and we put a lot of things on paper, sorted out a lot of our estate, and wrote it all down and thought, we're going to do this as smoothly and amicably as possible, which I've listened to so many podcasts and so many of them start off exactly that way. And they're like, I felt like a first time mum. You know, once you have your second and your third baby, you think of the way you were with your first and you're like, oh, such a first timer.
Yeah.
just so naive, I suppose. Mm. I've got an older friend, our practice manager at work, and she is twice divorced. And I think of some of the conversations I had with her first, like within those first few months, and I think, gosh, you must have been sitting there like a seasoned no athlete, just looking at me and going, okay,
like shit to come sort of thing. It's not going to be this easy. Yeah,
exactly. So. Yeah, we've had a few really rough moments, a few really awful altercations, to be honest. And that's really difficult. But I think the thing is you don't divorce the same person that you marry. You don't break up with the same person that you started dating. Like, you have all of this familiarity there. And all of a sudden you don't have the love. And to keep that love when you're going through so much hurt is really, really hard. Like I can say, and I can see, like I love Brad. I love that he's my kid's dad. Love the times that we've had together. But when you're going through a breakup, the reason you're going through the breakup is because the bad times started to outweigh the good. The values that didn't align start to outweigh the values that did. And so all of a sudden you don't see eye to eye on things that you found important enough to split over. And they're really defining moments. And for me, the values, they're really defining values, and they just start to become so obvious. Your differences start to become so obvious. And then it's all laced with hurt, all laced with hurt on so many different levels, and you're trying to navigate your own grief, you're trying to navigate the kids' grief, while you're going through, you know, your perspective's changing. Like I'm Catholic, my whole family are married, my mum and dad are 40 years married this year. There's not a lot of separation and divorce on either side of my family. There's a little bit of having not got married. There's a few that, you know, haven't been married as such, but anyone who is, there's very, very few separations. I have one aunt.
And they're quite stoic on that.
Very much so. I think that puts barriers in place for not just for women, but for relationships as well. You know, we say relationships are hard. You have to work at them. Mm-hmm. When it gets hard, dig your feet in. Like, if I hadn't made that line in the sand for me, and it was much easier for me to make that line in the sand with reference to the kids than what it would have been for myself. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's just so much to navigate at the time. We have had a couple of awful altercations. I'm not going to fluff around that. I don't think anyone can go through a breakup without that, without some kind of conflict. And then it just became about putting boundaries in place. So at the moment, while we navigate this, we don't step foot into each other's houses. We're in the process of going through mediation. We talk on the phone or text in terms of the kids, but anything to do with financial settlement we do via email or solicitor, and we just try to keep things separate. And I'm really quick to put in boundaries. Like, if we are having a phone conversation and we're not seeing eye to eye, I will stop it there and then. I'll just go, let's come back to this at another time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those boundaries to start with were really hard for Braid to accept. It would just make him honestly irate. He would get so angry because I'd never put them in place before. And all of a sudden he's,
he's trying to access that person that he knew, and he would have been frustrated that he couldn't. I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I can see it from his point of view. And I often say that to my psych. I'm like, I know that that would have made him so angry. I didn't do it to make him angry. I did it because it, like, I wasn't going to put myself in that situation anymore. But it's a whole new dynamic and a whole new relationship to try and navigate when you've been so close with this person, you've shared everything with this person.
Oh, it's really impressive hearing you talk about it though, and the skills that that you've got, and how you've been able to navigate it and what you've learned from it. Has it got easier since he's got a partner?
I am yet to meet her. She seems really lovely. I think I'd probably feel a little better if I did meet her. The relationship between him and I has definitely gotten easier, which is great. But in terms of the load on the kids, it hasn't gotten easier. I just really hope that they are together for a really long time. I just don't want my kids to have to lose someone else or try and navigate another breakup. So I really hope that they're solid. And that's, yeah, like I think the more people in my kids' lives that love them and the more wonderful people, the better. So, yeah, I know easier, definitely got, between Brad and I, it's definitely become easier. I think he's probably getting a few needs met in other areas that I used to meet. So now, rather than there being blurred lines, it's more like, well, that's her role now, not mine, mm-hmm. which I think might make it a bit, yeah, well, much easier.
Are they living together, are they?
No, but she's definitely in and out of the house when the kids aren't there at the moment.
When the kids aren't there or they are there?
Yeah, she hasn't stayed while the kids are there, but they spend quite a bit of time together. So she has kids as well, and they must be on a similar roster as such, which sounds awful. And so, yeah, I know Brad shared with the kids this week that she'd been staying up there with him this week while I've got the kids here. So, yeah, it's definitely easier on me in terms of Brad and my relationship, but more challenging on me because the kids are trying to navigate that and trying to process that. And that leaves me trying to do that without stepping on any toes. Like, mm-hmm. I want the kids to know that if they want to speak to me about her, they can, but I don't want to be nosy. I'm like, I'm not being nosy for my sake. You know, I'm happy Dad has a relationship. I'm not trying to look into that. I just want you to know that you can talk to me about that as well. You don't have to feel like you need to protect me. Like my youngest said yesterday, he's like, oh, Mum, do you know? And then just sort of paused. And I was like, no, what, sweetheart? He's like, Dad and I won't use her name, but Dad and his new girlfriend have kissed. And I was like, oh, I'm sure they have, sweetheart. And you could tell he was just trying to suss out, like, can I talk about this? Is this going to hurt Mum? And it was that first little testing the waters as to see, is it safe to talk to Mum about this or can't I? And so I'm just being mindful and trying to be really open and being really like responding really positively to anything that they tell me about her so that I'm still that person. I don't ever want them to feel like they need to hide anything from me or not tell me things or feel like they need to buffer what they say for my well-being. Mm-hmm. So I'm just being, yeah, just really mindful of the way that I'm responding, I suppose. Like, you know, oh, I heard you spent some time with Dad's girlfriend and her family. How was it? That would have been so much fun. What are they like? You know, are they, because they spend a bit of time at the skate park together, like, have they got some cool tricks? Are they riding skateboards or scooters? Like, and just trying to open up that conversation so they know it's okay to talk about her in this house. That's fine.
Oh, you're amazing.
Doesn't always go perfectly. That's for sure.
I'm sure. And I guess there's a lot of reflection too. You think what you could have said in certain situations and then you get to learn and use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just how you want to respond, I suppose. Like, and I've definitely been so much better at that, just been so much better at being able to sit in the situation. And as uncomfortable as it is, because emotions are uncomfortable, like anger is uncomfortable, sadness is uncomfortable, like and I think just becoming more and more aware of more and more respectful of their just emotions. And if they're coming out, that's a good thing. And so I try to think at the end of the week that I've had the kids that it's a win for me if they've all completely lost their shit at least once each. Then I'm like, okay, that's cool. I did my job this week. I balanced them out. I put enough boundaries in place that they completely lost it and got all of those emotions out, whether they were angry and yelled at me and, you know, or cried or whatever. I was like, that's good. That's what they needed. They needed to get all of that out.
Good on you. That's such a good way to look at it. And what about you in terms of dating? Has that been fun?
Yeah, I have been on a few dates and it has been really fun actually. So having met Brad when I was 19, I never really dated. Like I was at college before that. And so I don't know, you're not exactly dating when you're at college. The relationship, forming relationships is very different. Mm-hmm. And so it's it has been really enjoyable. It's been really enjoyable meeting a lot of different people as well. I say a lot. I mean meeting a lot of different people. I've been dating a lot of different people. Being a mum and a business owner and whatnot, like you completely lose your social life, full stop. And so reinvigorating that has been really fun. I've really enjoyed that. I do find, though, I definitely have a lot to work through. I've got some enormous boundaries and enormous barriers that as soon as somebody starts to push on them, I'm just like, shut it down. Okay, this isn't fun anymore and I'm not ready for anything more serious. Let's just back up. Yeah. I also don't know how as adults we have space to develop relationships. They take time and energy. And I'm just so flat out with like balancing the kids the week that I have them and then running the businesses the week that I don't have them, that if I even start hanging out with somebody after a week, I'm like, I'm so far behind in the rest of my life that this has to back off because I can't afford to fall behind in every other aspect.
Do you think when you're ready, combined with meeting the right person, that would be okay though? You'd get swept up in it and you wouldn't care that you had stuff to do because you're just engrossed with spending time with them? Or is that fairy tale land?
I think the right person would get it. I think the right person, it would probably be waves and flows. Like there'd be a week that you would probably spend a lot of time together and then the following week you'd be like, I have so much to catch up on. And I suppose I probably believe that the right person would be in a similar situation. They'd be balancing a very full-on life as well. Otherwise, you don't have as many things to connect on, right? And so I feel like adult relationships probably develop in a very different way to when you are younger. Like when you're younger, you are probably balancing casual work and uni studies or something and no other competing priorities. So I think coming together as an adult, you know that the new relationship is probably relatively far down on the scale, whereas when you're younger, a new relationship is probably number one. I think having that perspective is fairly healthy, and I think that would then develop over time. And I think for me, those boundaries are at the moment really, really strong. I do think that they will probably soften a little in the future. But the thing where I lost myself before, it straight away, if that starts to get blurred or even, you know, something is said that puts pressure on that, I'm like, oh, this isn't right. Nah. Yeah. So yes, I'm definitely open to it. I still believe in marriage and love marriage. Brayden and I just ran our race. I'd love to say that I would meet somebody again and you know, grow old together, all those things. I'm definitely open to relationships and marriage. I've got a bit of, you know, grieving and a bit of hurt to work through. And I think starting a new relationship would be challenging. But definitely.
And it is still very early days. Like it's, you said 7 or 8 months. It hasn't been long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially how fast life goes now. That's bugger all time.
Absolutely. And especially now that we're week about, I feel like that's made life go even quicker because you live week to week. And it feels like you blink and the next month is done. So you're exactly right. Like we're only navigating very, very early waters. And the kids are still young as well. We've got Artie, who is our eldest. He's about to turn 12. So, and then our youngest has not long turned 7. So, yeah, I don't know. I can see the next few years, next 5 years, are just going to be full on kids and work. And if someone can fit in around that, then that would be great. But otherwise, I'm not in a rush.
Right. And so if your eldest is 12, you're quite young when you had your first?
Yeah. So I had Artie when I was 23. So as a baby, met Braid when I was 19, about to turn 20, married at 22, and then, yeah, Artie at 23.
Do you look back at it and go, wow, like whirlwind?
I absolutely do. Absolute whirlwind. And it was a whirlwind. And we fell pregnant with Artie, like we weren't planning to become pregnant. And not that that was, you know, a bad thing at all. I just think things come to people at different times. And I look at it now and I think, you know, I've been through that time of mayhem of little kids and, you know, juggling everything. It's so full on. But I also do reflect on it and think, you know, I didn't, you don't have the skills to be a parent until you are a parent. I completely understand that. But I think if, you know, I look at so I have two sisters, and one of my sisters is 31, turning 32, and she's pregnant with her first. And I look at her in her relationship, and I look at them and their, her and Tom and their careers, and everything in their life is very settled. And so to bring a baby into that environment is, you know, just very, and it's a really nice environment to bring a baby into. Brayden and I weren't settled yet. We were over in Western Australia. I was only in my grad year out of uni. I was still very focused on career, and we hadn't found our forever home. Not that kids can't move, they can. Again, kids are resilient, all those things. But we weren't settled in our own lives yet. And not that it doesn't matter. Kids are fine, families are fine. All it takes is love and care. But it would have made it easier. For sure. We were away from family. We've never really had family very close. Like even now my family's 2.5 hours away. So it presented more challenges, I think. I don't know. I don't know whether I answered your question there, Kate. I feel like I've talked around in circles.
The way you describe everything is amazing. So your career, because I want to make sure that we talk a lot about this, because there's a lot more to you than a separation and dating. Incredible.
Yeah, that's a very small part.
Small but interesting part. And yes. I guess such
current challenge.
Yeah, it's a big challenge, huge. And I'm sure everyone is finding it really interesting, whether it's to relate to their own life or helping others, or just the insights that you've given is amazing. So I'm picturing you at 23, first baby, grad student, and then I see you now. You've got how many staff in your practice as a pelvic health?
11 or 12 now, which is awesome.
How did you get from that to that?
just one foot in front of the other, honestly. No, I've always been quite a big picture thinker. And I actually think part of my separation came from, I think I had a little mini mental breakdown last year. I very much had a time in my life that from when I was going through school, so I'm a physiotherapist, and to become a physio is quite high marks at school. And so I can remember writing things down on a piece of paper when I was in, I don't know, year 10 or year 11. And I was aiming for physio, not at the time that I knew what physio was, mind you. Someone had just floated it, said you needed good marks. I was relatively smart. I thought, sure, that's something I can aim for. I wrote it up on a piece of paper, and I can remember just thinking like what I wanted. And I remember thinking about going to uni, like I wanted to own my own business. So my dad has always owned his own business. And mum and dad are also on the farm. So they, I guess, technically have two businesses. So I always wanted to do that. And I always wanted to be in health. And I always wanted to have a dramatic impact on the people that I work with. And so I can remember having written up on this piece of paper the marks that I needed to get into uni, and then what I wanted. I wanted to own my own business, and I got to the start of last year, and it kind of hit me that I had done all of these things that I thought it would take a lifetime to do. So I had my family at the time, what I would have said was a beautiful family, this beautiful family unit. I had the business, and you know, business is up and down, but we'd been established for long enough that you could say we were thriving. And I can just remember having a moment that I was like, I'm I'm not happy. I'm not fulfilled. This is not what I expected. When I get to the point that I've ticked off all of these to-dos as such, life to-dos, life achievements, and this isn't how it's supposed to feel. And that's probably that realization is what has sparked me onto just, I guess, realizing what was right and what was not right in my life at the time, I suppose. So yeah, I've always had the vision that I would own my own business. So I went to uni, trying to think how many years out that I was when we opened, maybe 4 years out of uni when we opened our business. And then it just expanded from our, well, Braid and I opened it together.
Okay.
So we opened, to start with, we just opened a functional training gym. So he's a PT. Okay. And so it was like an F45, but before F45 was big. And I was just doing 2 days of 2 days of physio out of a room that we had there while I was working for the university. So I was, supervising students and whatnot as my part-time job. And then just 2 days a week, I was seeing clients privately for myself. And then when we had Boston, which was in 2017, we moved into a bigger premises, which allowed me to expand into further into physio and take on a couple of employees, as well as expand our Pilates studio too. So we have a reformer Pilates studio. And then 3 years ago now, I think we sold the gym portion. So then we were purely allied health and Pilates, and it's just kept growing from there, which is, super exciting. So really it's just one step in front of the other, I think, with grand plans. I'm not a big vision board person, but I definitely do believe in, what you think happens very much. Once I've decided on something, it tends to happen. And I think that comes down to every step you put forward every day. So I think it can become overwhelming when you sit down and you do, I'm not a 10-year plan person. I'm not even a 5-year plan person. I just have this idea of where I want to go. And every day I'm like, well, what step can I take today to move that forward? And then before you know it, you've taken a million steps forward and you're at the place where you imagined you would be 5 years ago.
Amazing. And with your physio, are you a general physio or are you now just specializing in pelvic health?
All women's health. So so when we say pelvic health, I don't do men and I don't do kids either. It's all women. Mm-hmm. And I specialize in and around the pre and postpartum stage as well. So I mean, I do definitely look after older women and menopausal and everything to do with incontinence and prolapse and pain. But I love that the pre and postpartum, we have such incredible research coming out at the moment of how much impact we can have, how much we can actually start to identify the risks of pelvic floor trauma, how much our interventions can actually prevent that, and just the guidance in and around there. And it's just so rewarding. I love the first time I have a mum come into me after she's given birth. So I look after them pretty closely from 34 weeks. And then the last time you see them, they're huge and you've worked on all of this birth preparation. And then you see them, they bring their 3-week-old babe in and they're tiny and gorgeous. And then you sit down and, hear about their birth story. And it's incredible. And it doesn't matter how it turned out. So you can do all the prep in the world, but there's certain things that you can't control. Like birth is unpredictable. So they're not always perfect outcomes and not always everything that you've worked for and hoped for. But part of preparing our women for birth is for them to understand the twists and turns that it can take and what that means for them. And what we find is the more educated they are, the more they understand that, then the less trauma in terms of emotional and mental trauma that they experience, even if they experience physical trauma. And so to sit down and be able to debrief with them, and then also them to know that they're in a really safe place. I find that it's just such a privilege to be able to be that person for women. And I get to snuggle babies like all day. And it's beautiful.
And it was born out of your own struggles with birthing in rural New South Wales. And yeah, to tell us more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Artie, my eldest, about to turn 12, I had him in Glen Innes. So that's my hometown, rural New South Wales. We had just moved back from Kalgoorlie, which is WA, hadn't actually decided where I was going to have him. And my family doctor was like, well, I think you probably better stay put and stay here. And I was like, okay, no worries.
Yeah. It's all going to be easy. Oh. Sort of thing.
Absolutely. I had him there, and my care was wonderful. It was my birth was very fast, and I actually tore really badly. So I had a high-grade perineal tear, what we call an OAC, so an obstetric anal sphincter injury, but it was misdiagnosed. Not on the part of anyone. I don't actually hold any fault or blame there. Most of my tear was internal, so really hard to diagnose. And it was just afterwards that my recovery was so tough, really hard. I also had a postpartum hemorrhage.
Were you specialising in this at the time, or was it afterwards that you started specialising?
Yeah, I did. It was because of what I navigated with Artie. So I had a friend who was in pelvic health at the time, and she helped me navigate things, but she was over in WA. The closest one that I could get into anywhere around my area was Newcastle. Just the logistics of coming back and forth from Newcastle, it just didn't fit with my life. It was really difficult.
How long does it take to travel? What's that, about 6 hours, 5 hours?
Well, round trip, yeah. So it's like 3.5.
Okay.
It's quicker now because we've got a decent road. But at the time, you've got a brand new baby too. Mm-hmm. The business, and it was all, I just found it way too challenging. But even before that, to try and get a diagnosis was really, really hard. And it was only as I navigated my own symptoms that I was like, no, this is not okay. Started putting myself through a few courses, and I was like, yep, that's me. This has happened to me.
And what were your symptoms?
So this is very graphic. Like, I couldn't hold in my farts at all. I was very nervous in terms of fecal continence. So, I don't get tummy bugs very often, but if I ever had a hint of a tummy bug, I was like, not leaving the house today, just in case. Like, I just never felt confident that if I was in a hurry, like if I had gastro or something and there's another reason there, I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I could hold that.
Wow, so the minute a fart came on, you'd have to, it would just come out. You couldn't do anything.
It would just come out.
And would you try and would it hurt, or would it just didn't work?
It would just be really, really hard. And sometimes I could, like, because also I'm a physio. I'm in a small room just with one person. I changed my diet completely, and I did a lot of strengthening work, and I was in control of most of the symptoms, I suppose. It was just in the, like, I would always feel very vulnerable in the incidents. Like if I'd had a coffee and I was going out with somebody, and you know how sometimes coffee will give you a bit of a quick urge, you've got to go to the toilet. I would be like, oh, I don't think I'll have a coffee just in case. Yeah, like I was just nervous. And I never had an episode of fecal incontinence, but I was just nervous. I knew that if I could.
Yeah.
That's pretty confronting, as at the time I was very young, like when this happened to me. Anyway, I navigated all of that, and then
so you were 23 24.
The only advice that I had, or like none of my friends had had kids yet. So talking to my mum, and I think you're a little bit reserved as well. When no one's talking about things, when you start talking about them, like you just kind of drop little things in there, very minor symptoms, and just see how it's going to be received. And I would talk to mum and she's like, yeah, things change, things like that happen. And I'm like, this is pretty significant. I'm really young. This doesn't feel right. Yeah. And I'm really not willing to put up with this. Like I knew that it wasn't right, I suppose. And so then, yeah, that's what triggered my studies. And it wasn't until I had all my symptoms under control just from pelvic floor strengthening and general strengthening. And wasn't until I was pregnant with Callie that I was trying to advocate for myself having a cesarean section, which I found really, really difficult. I didn't have, again, at the time I wasn't seeing a women's health physio or a pelvic health physio. I was just going through the public system, and I kept saying to the obstetrician, I was like, I think I need a C-section. And he was like, oh, so you'd like a C-section? I was like, no, I think I need a C-section. And I was so torn because I was like, no, I would love nothing more than to birth my baby vaginally. Like I would love to do that again.
One had helped you with your tear?
No, not at this point. No. I said, what pushed me over the edge? I said to the obstetrician at the time, I was like, okay, so I have a sphincter defect, which is like the muscles that surround Uranus. It's like, I have a sphincter defect and scar tissue there. What if that happens to me again? And he goes, well, if that happens again, we'll just repair it. And I was like, okay. And so give me a percentage of what kind of deficits I'll have afterwards. And he goes, oh, no, 100% recovery. I was like, 100%, 100%. You're telling me if I have two tears and two lots of scar tissue that I'm going to have 100% function? He's like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, yeah, no. Can you refer me to somebody, please? And
Think about the people who don't have the knowledge that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about that as well because it was so hard to advocate for myself. Mm. I felt like there's my clinical brain that's telling me one thing, and my female brain, my woman brain, my mum brain that is telling me another. And I found it so difficult to be the one that is like, no, I need this. And I couldn't do it for myself. So I got him to refer me. It was actually a student of his at the time that referred me to a proctologist in Newcastle, and they did an anal ultrasound. After I saw him, he was like, absolutely no vaginal birth. And I was like, yeah, thank you. Can you write that to my obstetrician, please? And so from then I had to, Callie and Boston via C-section.
And did you get some help for your tear?
Yep. So after that,
you have to have surgery or anything, or?
I haven't. At the time, he said the surgeries aren't great. And he was like, hopefully we wouldn't do anything until you finished having babies anyway. And hopefully by the time you're finished having babies, we have better options. I saw a pelvic health physio, and I did a lot of strengthening work. And what I find now, so I still haven't had surgery. I'd be interested actually to have another ultrasound. I've actually asked my doctor to send me for another referral. I just haven't followed through yet. If I keep myself really strong, I don't have any problems. If my strength starts to decline, then I get the like minor symptoms that I'm like, oh, okay, it's time to get strong again. But I don't have any active symptoms currently.
How many women do you think are out there struggling with similar things that don't have access to support?
Yeah, it's actually scary to think. And I think that's why, well, that's 100% why I've developed the Rural Women's Physio, but it's also why I have been really cautious in how I roll my services out, because I think there'd be a lot of women that have some subtle symptoms that they navigate themselves that are unaware of how significant their symptoms are or how significantly impacted their long-term health and will be, or how these symptoms are only potentially, well, without the right intervention, are actually only going to get worse, and what that means for them as they navigate menopause and then navigate.
So what's an example of what could happen? Like what's an example of something that could be wrong and what could happen later in life?
Well, we have, or I'm going to have to try and pull something. If we talk fecal incontinence as such, it's something what seems really low, 2% of our population. But of that, it's significantly, I can't think of the stats off my head, it's significantly more women. And that is a really, really strong indicator, a really strong factor of what will land you in a nursing home. So it's a really big, it's a really big contributor to actually moving into a nursing home as opposed to being able to live independently. And our OAC, or our third and fourth degree perineal tears, are actually a really big indicator of any kind of fecal incontinence later in life. Also, with our pelvic floor dysfunction, we then have, you know, prolapse, which isn't part of my issues, but something that I look after a lot. The incidence of prolapse are really high. And again, if we have some prolapse, but we actually have some pelvic floor muscle trauma, as in a levator ani tear or something along those lines, you may not have symptoms immediately, or your symptoms may be really minor. But without recovery early and without rehabilitation early postpartum, then your long-term outcome is really poor. So you're going to, you know, develop a higher grade prolapse. You're, you know, potentially going to go down the line of surgery and repair. And we know that anyone who has that sort of pelvic floor trauma, the rates of the incidence of reoccurrence of a prolapse even after surgery is really, really high. So I find our regional and our rural areas, our GPs know about surgeons, and everyone will travel for a surgery, but they don't know that the risk of it reoccurring is so high without having the input of a pelvic health physio. And so they skip this really important step, and then they continue to navigate this as they go. So they might have a repair in their mid-40s, but then they're looking at needing a second repair when they get to 60. And then by the time they're in their mid-60s, they're like, well, I'm not going to have another one. What do I do now? And it significantly impacts. They're like silent problems, right? They're problems that when you look at a lady, you can't see them. You don't know that they're planning their social outings based on where the public bathrooms are. You don't know that they're not having sex and not having those intimate relationships because it's painful. You don't know that they're embarrassed because something is hanging out of their vagina. Like, it's things that impact women really significantly. It impacts their confidence, their self-image, their self-worth. It impacts their relationships, all of these quality of life things that as you go through life, you only want to be getting better and better in all of those things, not worse and worse. Breaks my heart to think that, you know, and this probably a lot of people I talk to, this sort of thing freaks them out. But I think, gosh, when kids leave home, I hope everybody reinvigorates their sex life and has the best sex of their lives and enjoys that really intimate relationship with their partner again. And, you know, all inhibitions are out the window. And like, I just hope that I just want women to become more and more comfortable in their bodies for what their bodies are. And at the moment, so many of us don't even look at our vulva, let alone be, you know, proud for whatever it is that they look like and what they do for us. And so when our women have, you know, prolapse or whatnot, a lot of times they're disgusted by their own anatomy. And I just think that's just heartbreaking for me.
And I really love what you said about, you know, as we're getting older, all these things in life should be getting better, because I think often people accept things not being great and go, oh, it's just aging, it's just part of it. When actually, you know, there are things you can do to reduce the impacts and make your life better than it was when you were younger.
Absolutely. And I think we need to, like, our mindset should swing so far the other way. Like when you get into your 30s, and then, you know, I hear from all of my friends who are 40, like 40s are the best. I think our bodies have done incredible things, and we need to recognize our body is a vehicle, and it's not a defining thing for us. Like, it's just this beautiful body that drags us around to all of these incredible experiences. And that's why we should be looking after it. And that's why we need to fuel it and exercise it, so that it can help expose us to these incredible life experiences. And so I hope that, and I like to think that all of our inhibitions with our body just dissolve, and that we just, I don't know, wholeheartedly accept everything that we are for what it is. It's a vehicle.
Really is. Now, I feel like we could, you know, we haven't even scrape the surface. There's so much more we could talk about, but I'm wary of time and of your friend that you're going to catch up with. So do you think there's anything massive that we've missed chatting about?
I don't know. I agree. I feel like we could talk here for a very long time.
Well, you're very good at talking, in a good way. Sorry, that comes across like, no, you're very articulate. Is the right thing.
Oh, thank you, because I do feel like thankful for my coffee this morning. No, I think it's just I love working in this space, and I love working with you and your team, Kate. And I feel like what I love about it is that we have this same appreciation for women in general. I'm going to say women. I love men too, but I just think women are incredible. And I think as you get older, you just really start to appreciate everything that everyone brings to the table. So I love working with you, and I loved meeting all of your team, or some of your team. In Orange, it was really nice to get to know them. And I am just enjoying, I think, getting to that next stage of life and finding people that are similar, people that value the same things as I do. And it's even more exciting when you then get to work together to promote that and push that. I think that's really exciting to try and reach women who might need to hear different bits and pieces, as you said, different challenges. And, you know, I think I'm very, very fortunate. My life is fantastic. I have beautiful people around me, but I've been through ups and downs. I've been through challenges, and I hope that someone who might need to hear it hears this and just picks themselves up a little.
Yeah, it's, I'm in awe of you, if I'm honest. So anyone out there struggling with their pelvic floor and core, we have Core Connects run led by Jess and by Celia on Dedicate. But if someone's got a really huge problem, or maybe they're not sure if they've got a huge problem, what should their next step be?
Yeah, absolutely. If they're not sure, then they just need to speak to someone. And that's you can reach out to me either through DMs or emails, and I'm more than happy to jump on a Zoom or jump on a call. I'm doing outreach clinics at the moment. So I'm based in Tamworth, New South Wales. I now spend 1 week, 1 day a month in Armidale, 1 day a month in Manila, and I'm going to be spending 2 days up in Glen Innes. I'm going to be reaching out even further than that as the year goes on. I also do telehealth consults by request. I don't have anything open right now that you can book a telehealth in, but if you reach out to me, I will do that. Probably the best thing to do is to chat, just to navigate. If you have symptoms and you're not sure, please call me, please reach out. I've got online programs that we can navigate into. So about to release my birth prep program, which is awesome. So that's all about minimizing pelvic floor trauma through birth. And then I've got a postpartum program as well. And that's all about recovery. But in terms of questions, you've got to talk. If you're experiencing any symptoms, when you're especially post-birth, you don't know what's normal and what's just common, because everything is just different and you don't know if it's different normal or different abnormal. So talk. And the more you talk, the more you'll find people will open up. And if someone can't answer your questions, ask someone else, like your doctor or whatnot, and you're not satisfied with the answer, seek out somebody else.
Such good advice.
Just make sure that the advice that you're taking is from somebody who actually knows, like seek out a professional. If you're asking pelvic health questions, go to a pelvic health physio, and don't take your friend's sister's advice who saw this, that, or the other. Like, you know, find out yourself, get an assessment.
Even GPs are going to say, yeah, 6 weeks in. Yeah, I think you're good to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. GPs are looking medically and look, it's getting better, but it's hard for them to know all the services, or it's hard for them to refer you to services that you don't have access to in your area. Mm. And that's where things that, you know, that you're doing, Kate, where people can access your platform from anywhere, and health is catching up. So, you know, the programs that I'm putting forward as well, like we're slowly getting there. We want to be able to help people that don't have access, or who are, you know, isolated location wise, or for any other reason, we want to be able to help you.
Amazing. All right, we're going to end with a bit of fun, Jess. So okay. I've got 10 this or that questions.
Oh, okay.
Would you rather go for a run or go for a walk?
Run.
Pilates or yoga?
Oh, that one's hard. It actually very much depends on my mood, but I'm going to say Pilates.
I feel like you have to, considering your business is in Pilates.
I know.
Weights or HIIT?
Weights.
Champagne or cocktail?
Or a marg cocktail.
Yeah. Chili marg. Do you like those?
Oh, yeah, nice.
Done well, though. If a marg is not done well, it's like you're just drinking straight tequila, and it's like, it's risky. Absolutely. Do you reckon ordering a marg is risky?
I do think, yes. Yeah. And sometimes even, you know, at the best establishments, you think, oh, they're going to nail this, and you get it, and you're like, so far short.
Yeah, so disappointing. book or movie?
Book.
Baby or a toddler?
Or baby.
Skydiving or bungee jumping?
Oh, skydiving. No way am I ever going bungee jumping.
So what's the difference for you?
Oh, I don't know. I am just really fearful that the bungee will break.
What about the parachute?
I don't know. I'm not as fearful of that. I have actually skydived, and I have not been bungee jumping.
Where did you skydive?
Just west of Sydney.
Cool. Would you rather regret doing something or regret not doing something?
I'll say regret doing something, but I'm not really a regret person. I'll do it and I'll find a lesson in it.
Nice. That's very Miss Universe sort of answer.
World peace.
Yeah. Would you rather be invisible or read minds?
Oh, I don't know whether I want to read minds.
Take or leave both of them.
I don't know. Yeah, take or leave both of them. I can't decide.
Would you rather go back in time or see into the future?
See into the future.
That's us. Thank you so much, Jess, for your time. Oh, just amazing. Thank you for all your energy. You'll probably be tired now. Are you? You will be. You'll be like, thank you so much for sharing so much. And yeah, your wisdom really shines through at just 35 years young.
Oh, Thank you. I don't know about wisdom. I just...
Intelligence as well.
No, life just takes you places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
So good to see you. Thanks for your time. I hope you enjoy the rest
of
the week.
So good to see you too. Thank you so much. Yes, you too. And we'll be in touch.
Cool. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. See you. Bye.
Thank you all so much for listening to the Dedicate podcast. And thanks so much to Jess for her time and incredible wisdom today. If you enjoy our podcast, please hit subscribe so you can be notified when new episodes launch. We'll be back with season 9 in term 3, and there will also be a bonus episode next term. If you've missed some episodes, here are some popular ones from this season. Nick Sandland, one of our trainers, moving to the country, motherhood, career and people pleasing. Sarah Henney, isolation, drinking in the bush and starting own business. And Viv Conway, normalizing female pleasure, girls get off, entrepreneurship and depression. Dedicate is the online health and fitness community for rural and regional women, mums, and those that love a down-to-earth approach to fitness. Everyone is welcome. Short, effective workouts you can fit into your life with a supportive community of women across Australia and New Zealand, as well as our Core Connect pelvic sessions with Jess. Get your 7-day free trial at kateivyfitness.com and look out for our next challenge, Dedicate Spice, which is a weights and Pilates 8 weeks challenge. It opens next Sunday, the 21st of April. See you there.